On the show today, we have CSI's very own Alex Kite and Caron's Josh Schrager talking about what's going on with sanctions and watch list screening at credit unions today. Josh and Alex are here to give us the latest in this fascinating, fascinating topic, so check it out. Awesome, here with CU Broadcast. Welcome back to our show. And on today's program, we have CSI's Alex Kite right there next to me. Alex, how are you, sir? Good to see you again.
I'm wonderful, Mike. It is so good to be back. I've missed both of you.
Oh, really? Well, thank you. I appreciate that. The feeling is mutual. Look at Josh down there. He's very heartfelt. Look at that.
He meant it. That's the beauty of it. I know he means it. So, man.
Well, and speaking of Josh, we have Caron's Josh Schrager. You got to say that slowly, Josh.
You got it. It's all good. There's an SH. We're all good.
They just roll into one each other. So, Josh, how are you today, sir? Good to see you.
Life is a beautiful one. We're all good. Happy to be here.
Good. Well, glad you guys are here too, because we get to talk about this super interesting topic that you guys have turned me on to, and it's sanctions and watch list screening. And I just find this fascinating, especially from a financial services perspective, because I've never thought about it in that way before. But you guys, obviously, this is kind of your area of expertise. So we're kind of talking about what's going on in the sanctions and watch list screening at credit unions today, or financial institutions. A lot has happened, obviously, in the last year or so because of obvious reasons that we'll get into later in the interview. But Alex, I want to start with you. So can you give us a quick reminder on what sanctions are and why they're really important for financial institutions, especially in today's world?
Yeah. So really what sanctions are, when you boil it down, is they're just a control that's put into place to protect, prevent, and disrupt financial crime and really risk around sanctioned individuals and entities.
Right.
And really what we're doing with sanction screening is we're just checking against published watch lists. Sanctions list that our wonderful friends at Caron provide covers a whole array of things, but really what you're doing is you're checking that the individual or entity is not on a list and you can do business with them.
Okay, gotcha. And I'm gonna set aside the Ukrainian situation just for a second here, but mm-hmm. How prevalent is this? Again, not counting the Ukrainian situation, because that really raised the level up here big time. But how commonplace is this in our world today with the sanctions and the watch list, especially from a financial institution's perspective?
I mean, it's very prevalent.
Okay.
And, you know, the bigger you get, the bigger risk profile you're going to have. You know, it really brings in your whole compliance effort. It's not just sanction screening.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And yeah, again, this is a whole new world for me. So, and every time you guys say anything, it's such a great education. So I really appreciate this. So I'm going to stick with you on this one, Alex. And Josh, you can chime in as well. How do sanctions and the watchlist screening fit into a financial institution's compliance efforts? Alex, I'll let you go first on this one.
Sure. Yeah. So like I just said, it's not just sanction screening. Sanction screening is a part of it. But basically what you're doing is you're just establishing your risk posture for your institution.
Okay.
Whether fraud, anti-money laundering, and in this instance, we're talking about sanctions.
Okay. All right. And Josh, I want to get your take on this one as well.
Look, the most important thing that we think about now is we talk about sanctions lists, and which are real, and we all know about the sanctions lists. The reality is right now, compliance, sanctions compliance, and otherwise is well beyond the list. There are a myriad of folks, actors, individuals that may not appear on a sanctions list by name, but may still be treated by the U.S. government, European government, or otherwise as sanctioned by law. So the 50% rule is a great example of that. If a sanctioned actor owns 50% or more of another entity, that entity is thereby considered sanctioned by law. So there are thousands and thousands and thousands of entities that OFAC, that the Treasury Department considers as sanctioned by law, but will never appear in a list. So this is where things are getting, frankly, more and more complicated, where there's more of an onus on a financial institution, corporation, or otherwise to kind of do the dirty work and starting to understand. It's a lot of the dirty work that we do.
Right.
Starting to understand those folks who may not appear on a sanctions list, but otherwise are prohibited from transacting with.
Okay, and that kind of leads me to my next question, and this one's for you, Josh. How have sanctions changed or evolved over the past year or so? Obviously, there's the Ukraine thing, which we'll get to here in a second. But that aside, how have things evolved over the last year?
Look, so first of all, yeah, I mean, so we'll talk about Russia's happened this year. We all know Russia's happened. We'll talk about Russia, big deal. Other sanctions continue. So you know, maybe this is a couple days later when everyone is seeing our smiling faces, but I can say this week, the U.S. Treasury Department has sanctioned Iranian actors. They've sanctioned a state prosecutor in Bosnia and Herzegovina. I mean, sanctions are continuing. They have evolved a lot in a couple of ways, I'd say, in the past year, some trends we're seeing. So one, we see Russia writ large. We'll talk about that in a moment. Multilateralism is becoming something that's kind of coming into the forefront a bit more, I would say, that we're seeing coordinated actions that the U.S. may unravel or roll out at the same time as another government. So we're seeing more of that. Okay. We're seeing more and more focus on cryptocurrencies and virtual assets. So that's something else that's becoming increasingly prevalent. Of course, there's all sorts of questions that surround the targeting of those sorts of entities. And then we also see, we'll save it for another session, but we're also seeing more and more export control focus. And we have saw in June, FinCEN came out with the U.S. Commerce Department BIS for a rare joint alert between these two regulatory bodies that said financial institutions need to be more focused on export control violations or export control evasion from Russian actors. So this is something that's kind of going from the world of export control, but FinCEN and others in the U.S. government in the past year have brought it back to banks and financial institutions saying they need to pay attention to.
Yeah, no. And so I want to bring it back to the credit union's perspective or the financial institution's perspective. So what does the financial institution do once they're made aware of this type of stuff? What's the process or the procedure?
Yeah, so I mean, so look, there's a lot. So one is, you know, understanding the risk, right? So the first thing is kind of this understanding, right? And as I said, it's not just looking at the traditional list. It's thinking about sanctions evasion typologies that, again, regulators are putting out more information on.
Yeah.
So it's understanding. It's looking at transactions. It's looking at transactions beyond just what your clients have. So there's more of an onus on that. Certainly, it all comes back down to a risk-based approach, right, where the you know, regulators are saying not one size does not fit all. What is good for a credit union is not exactly what's going to work for a, you know, tier one, you know, bank. There's, you know, different priorities, there's different risks, and the man, if you will, you know, those in government, the regulators understand and recognize those differences and say that, you know, they want to hear, you know, how a credit union is going to focus on it differently and the steps that they're taking to understand their risk and how they're going to unravel that.
Okay. Oh, wow. Gosh, this is so fascinating. Okay. All right. Let's get to Russia and Ukraine. So how has that situation or elsewhere, even elsewhere, affected things for financial institutions? Because it sounds like it's, you know, over the last year or ever since last February, things have really risen to a level we haven't seen in quite a while. So how has that situation affected things, especially the financial institution perspective?
Yeah, look, so from jump, what we saw was, of course, just an onslaught of sanctions that were coming out of the U.S. Treasury Department and likewise around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a number of years at the U.S. Treasury Department working in the hallowed halls of 1500 Pennsylvania Avenue. And I can say what we've seen in the past 6 months is unprecedented. We've not seen the scale of sanctions targeting holistically in such a short amount of time, you know, the economy, the oligarchs, the institutions, the subsidiaries of the Russian economy.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting transition point we're in now is we have and we will continue to see more sanctions actions rolling out that target Russia.
Just
a little bit, but we will see. I think we will see more. I have no doubt about that. But what we're seeing now, kind of in the second phase here, is the Treasury Department and regulators telling financial institutions to be mindful of sanctions evasion. So they're now telling banks, they're telling credit unions, they're telling others that, okay, we've put out all these sanctions, hundreds and hundreds of people and institutions have been targeted, but now we are seeing how these institutions and individuals are trying to use financial institutions, including those in the United States, to evade these sanctions. And now they want us, they want all of those, everyone, right? To be mindful of these evasion typologies and what role they can be playing to detect it. And it's not going away. We can say that.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're being very creative and trying to evade these sanctions. So you know, obviously there are a lot of bad actors out there. So is that what you guys see? Is that a lot of folks are kind of getting around this and being really creative? Is that kind of and then how are these attempts being addressed?
That's right. Look, I mean, we're always going to see actors who are trying to stay a step ahead or try to get around the steps that have already happened with sanctions. We've seen it in North Korea. We've seen it in Iran. We see it in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we see? We see a lot of strategic divestment of assets. So saying that, you know, a sanctioned actor is divesting, they're transferring their assets to others, but ultimately they're still controlling those assets. They're still controlling those. We're seeing the use of shell companies, the increased use of shell companies and carve-outs. We're seeing third-party intermediaries coming into play. We're seeing that and more. So, you know, if you have a whole economy that's been targeted, the way that the Russian economy has been targeted, the reality is the Russian government and Russian actors are going to do everything they can to continue doing business. Mm-hmm. They're going to continue to use third parties, to use transshipments, to use cutouts. And it's going to continue. And it makes our jobs, it makes all the jobs of those who sit in financial institutions, a credit union, sitting in legal and compliance roles. It makes our jobs increasingly difficult day in, day out.
Yeah.
There's a lot to keep up with, but that's what we're all continuing to do.
Yeah, it's part of the job for sure. You guys are doing a fabulous job as well. So, and Alex, I'm going to come back to you on this one. So what else should financial institutions know in this area? Because it sounds like, just based on what Josh said, it's a complicated situation. These scenarios are super complicated right now. You really got to be on your toes for this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And it's very complex, as Josh has just outlined. It might take a couple of watches to absorb all of that information, but he's right. Like the reality is this is not going anywhere. It's not going to get easier for sure. There's a lot of complexity with it. There's a lot of screening. There's a lot that goes into the process. The enforcement of sanctions is going to continue to grow and grow. It's going to get deeper. It's going to get more impactful. And having proper controls and solutions in place is kind of the key to all of this to make it easier for these sanctions screening
tasks. Right. And last question here, and this one just came out of left field. I apologize but what happens if a credit union or a financial institution, I don't want to say caught, but gets caught up in somebody evading these sanctions? I mean, somebody tracks it and goes, oh my gosh, these people got through or something, that type of scenario. What happens in that situation? Can either of you kind of share what that scenario is like, Alex?
Well, the most impactful thing and the hardest thing is the monetary penalty. We're seeing millions, hundreds of millions. We've seen billions of dollars in fines just as it pertains to the actions, to the violations that occurred.
Right.
You know, there are often other things, but I think that the monetary penalty, that's the one that everyone's going to be the most afraid of.
Uh-huh. Okay. And Josh.
And at the end of the day, to add on to that, look, regulators at the end of the day, what do they want? They want partners in the private sector. Sanctions programs and money laundering, illicit financing is only as good as the front line. And the front line are banks, are credit unions, or financial institutions.
Yeah, yeah.
So look, will these fines, do they exist? Of course they do, right? That's how they make everyone take it seriously, and it is serious.
Oh yeah.
What do we want? Regulators want to hear from their compliance partners at credit unions, at financial institutions, to know what they are doing proactively to address the risk.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see what controls, what technologies, what data that they have in place. They understand that there is no such thing as a zero fail. It's the risk-based approach, right? Yeah. I said it before. Yeah. I'll say it again. So what do they want to see? They want to see that credit unions are taking this seriously at the end of the day, that they have the controls, they have the programs, they have the resources invested in it. And look, those are the mitigating factors. If we talk about, is someone going to be fined, or is it going to be a conversation? Are you going to self-report that you saw, that you stopped a transaction
before it happened,
that you stopped someone signing up for an account? So that's certainly, at the end of the day, what does the government want? They want willing partners. Again, when there are deficiencies and holes, fines will be levied. It happens. It will continue to happen. But, what do we encourage folks to do? What's the government encourage folks to do? Be proactive. Do the right thing. Get your house in order. Use the right technologies. Have the right people that you're surrounded with. And, kind of be a willing partner to get ahead and protect your institution, to protect your reputation, and ultimately, to impact to protect your clients and investors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well said. Well said. All right, guys. Yeah, this is, I feel like we're just getting warmed up here. Because so, I mean, this is the world we live in today, and it sounds like it's only going to escalate, right?
It is. I smell a part three coming on.
I do too. This is fascinating stuff. Oh my gosh. So anything else to add to wrap up, gentlemen? Any final thoughts? Josh, I'll let you go first.
Look, that's it. So much is changing, you know, in some ways, the more things change, the more they stay the same, but things are changing in a different way right now, yeah. Right? Yeah. So, you know, these actions are not going to reduce, you know, it's high time. It's been high time, but it's increasingly high time that there are opportunities is the good news, right? There's opportunities for credit unions to, you know, to you know, understand, to get their arms wrapped around this, mm-hmm. and be proactive. And those are the conversations, of course, that people want to be having, is showing their success, showing how serious they are about this. And certainly, I think that's, you know, if you walk away thinking, what can we do? That's it. Get ahead. Think about it. Be proactive. And look, we'll continue to monitor the change and what's ahead. And we'll look forward to being back for part three to talk about that.
I'm excited. All right. All right. I'm already sitting on pins and needles waiting for part three. Alex, anything else to add on your end?
I mean, I would listen to my friend Josh. He's a wise person. And there's a reason that I love having these conversations, is because I talk to him. I learn a lot. But I think the moral of the story is, get your controls in place, get your processes in place, make sure that your sanction screening efforts are kind of tied up and buttoned up. You have good data coming in, and you have a good solution like Watchdog Elite that will help to screen that data, and it helps to reduce those internal efficiencies.
Indeed. And I don't mean to make light of this type of stuff, but as you guys are talking, I'm thinking this is kind of fringing on a James Bond, Jason Bourne type of thing, it's so international and there's all these bad actors involved, and it's kind of the good guys versus the bad guys type of stuff. So yeah, this is just fascinating stuff. It's like a spy novel waiting to be written.
It really is.
So yeah, all right, guys. Josh, thanks, guys. I'll let you guys.
Silence is the way.
I know. I don't want to say anything. All right, guys. Thanks again. Appreciate the time, as always. Quite the education, and again, this is the world we're living in today. But thank you to you guys for all the efforts that you guys do and helping out financial institutions stay on the right track here. So good stuff. All right, guys. Until the next time, be well.
Thanks for having us.